the high costs and long lead times of logistics, a safer way to ship lithium batteries, and more demand for industrial trucks. Pull up a chair and join us as the editors of DC Velocity discuss these stories, as well as news and supply chain trends, on this week's Logistics Matters podcast. Hi, I'm Dave Maloney. I'm the Group Editorial Director at DC Velocity. Welcome. Logistics Matters is sponsored by Trevero Logistics. Trevero Logistics is an experienced Midwest-based freight brokerage firm. They have a national network of trusted carriers ready to meet your freight transportation needs. Visit Trevero.com and let their experts find you a solution. That's T-R-A-V-E-R-O.com. As usual, our DC Velocity senior editors, Ben Ames and Victoria Kickham, will be along to provide their insights into the top stories of this week. But to begin today, we've been reporting for more than a year just what a difficult time the logistics industry has been having. Costs remain high and lead times have increased. For an overview of what's causing logistics to be stuck in the doldrums, here's Victoria with today's guest. Victoria?
Thanks, Dave. Our guest today is John Denesian, Senior Director of Strategy for Supply Chain at risk assessment firm Moody's. He's here to talk with us, as you say, about rising logistics costs, extended lead times, and their potential effects on supply chains in the months ahead. Welcome, John.
Thanks, Victoria. Great to be here today.
So, as we said, logistics costs continue to grow. I think it's something you and your team have been tracking for quite a while. Can you tell us, you know, how big are the increases you're seeing and in what particular areas?
Absolutely. So logistics, you know, is the lifeblood of a supply chain. So regardless of how well you manufacture products or sell products, the logistics arm of the supply chain is just critical for movement and fulfillment of products. So incredibly important from a cost perspective. What we've been seeing is 2023 was a very good year for ocean freight, as an example, with the low probably hitting sometime through October of 2023 with approximately, you know, $1,300 per container, which was stable through 2023. As the conflict in the Red Sea emerged, that per container price shot up to almost $4,000 per container. So, you know, quite a bit higher, three times exactly higher than it was in the average of 2023. So we have, over the last few months, have started to see prices stabilize. And now, you know, down to somewhere around $2,700 per 40-foot container. So although still significantly above 2023, prices are starting to come down. There is some stabilization that's occurring in the industry, which is helping manage those costs for the remainder of 2024.
You've also been tracking extended lead times. You know, how long and what particular items or commodities, what does this mean for the supply chain, retailers, wholesalers, others?
Right. So, you know, so much is produced in China, as we know from multiple industries, whether you're talking, you know, raw materials, metals, chips, you know, all the way to retail and fast fashion. So a lot of, you know, industries impacted by, you know, what's coming out of China, and therefore what's going through, you know, the most critical ports right now for conflict in the Red Sea. You know, it's extended the lead times to about 15 days per shipment around the Cape of Good Hope, a longer route, obviously, than going through the Suez Canal and the Panama Canal. Actually, there's some good news on the Panama Canal, where we know there's been some drought issues going on there. It was just some movement to actually increase the capacity on those ships now going through there because of some water level increases. So there's some good news that the Panama Canal is starting to be able to manage more freight going through there and do so more efficiently. But the interesting thing about lead times is once the systems that to manage, you know, demand and supply planning adjust to the new lead time, you know, it adjusts itself so that the service supply is there and, you know, consumers and companies can be serviced correctly with goods and products that they need. The challenge is, though, that it adds significant inventory to, you know, whatever it is, a retailer, a wholesaler, a manufacturer, and therefore adds costs, adds more capacity for extended warehouse space to manage all this additional inventory that's coming in on a longer lead time. So, you know, even though the systems adjust, there is definitely a financial and physical impact to that as it continues to be at play with those longer lead times.
So what are some of the potential, like maybe longer term effects of what's happening? You know, what most concerns you, you know, where we sit today?
Sure. You know, it's really the what we call exponential risk. And if you look at all of these risks within supply chain, whether it's geopolitical, whether it's climate change, whether it's, you know, components of ESG, whether it's sanctions and compliance components, you know, all of them are somewhat interconnected. So when you believe you're managing one risk, realize that there's another risk that's connected to that you also have to look for a mitigation strategy for. So as risks become more, I guess, constant, and also the risks and the events that are happening are longer in duration, there's more opportunities for those exponential risks to be magnified beyond, you know, a 8 to 10 to 12 week recovery time. So now they become quarters and turn into years and so forth and so on. So as they become more elongated and interconnected, there's more to actually battle as far as getting visibility to those risks, how those risks are impacting other risks that are also, you know, concerns. And then how do you mitigate all of those risks in one consistent strategy? So, you know, the real answer here is having visibility to risks through robust data and analytics, and then being able to surgically determine what mitigation strategies you want to deploy, and actually now have them more than one-time deployments, have them become more of a strategic deployment portfolio that your company builds to mitigate these risks. I would say, you know, it's interesting. A great example is when we talk about climate risk, one of the unseen exponential connected risk is it has a massive impact on labor availability. So as you kind of think of climate change, hotter conditions in distribution centers, warehouses, that really has an impact on the labor. And it also has an impact on available labor, not only from a productivity standpoint, but as people move away from these areas that are getting more, you know, threatened by weather events, there's less labor pool to actually hire into to provide the talent that's needed into supply chain jobs.
I wanted to ask you about that. You know, the logistics industry, you know, has been facing labor shortages for a while now. It's tough to find workers across the industry, as you note. How does this affect the broader issues that we're talking about? How does this kind of feed into all this risk?
Sure. You know, as supply chains evolve and become more mature, one of the key areas is automation. And we'd like to think that it's been in play for decades, with autonomous trucks being probably the most recent example. But, you know, looking at warehouse automation and lights out warehouse automation, where they're being truly run in an automated fashion, still haven't really become mainstream. And so there's still people needed. And some of the challenges there are that there's a demographic or an aging population that, you know, prefers a different type of work experience. Those that are more mature in the supply chain today. I mentioned climate change also bring a big impact on employee productivity, and also labor due diligence laws that are becoming more robust to protect employees against, you know, work practices. So all those coming together call for different solutions. So one of the investments I've seen that a lot of supply chains are starting to invest in robotic process automation to actually start to, you know, determine, can we even take these very simple tasks that are repetitive and actually, you know, and put a process to those so that they're automated. That frees up a lot of talent to be deployed into other areas. You know, looking at trade schools or high schools to really recruit a new generation of workers that could be guaranteed a great career start in supply chain right out of high school and secure that job before they even graduate. So there's some kind of innovative things that's going on to kind of tap a new labor pool and to actually take some of those mundane processes that no one wants to do and automate those and leave that talent for more important, more thought process type of activities within chains.
What other, things or strategies can companies do to mitigate some of the risks we've been talking about? You've mentioned a couple of interesting things here. What other sort of maybe overall actions can companies take to mitigate some of the risks?
Sure, great question. And that's really the goal of all supply chain professionals, to actually ensure products and services flow on time and complete so that they can optimize revenue. Really where I see the future going is, rather than looking at all of these risks that are, bombarding supply chains on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, and then, trying to quantify what do we go after to mitigate, how do we determine what is most important? The concept of putting value at risk at the center of decision making is, I won't say a new concept, but it's relatively new to supply chain. So by looking at, if I can identify through my supplier risk with some very robust supplier risk metrics, determine how much value is at risk, meaning if these suppliers do not ship on time and complete, I will lose, $20 million, $30 million, $40 million worth of revenue. To be able to calculate that value at risk then allows you to determine, what do I strategically need to focus on to minimize that value at risk and recover, so that I don't, see that loss in revenue and or reputation even for not having products and services available to customers. So by putting that value at risk at the center, it ensures you that you can now look at mitigating those issues that are most relevant to that revenue risk. And that allows you to be more surgical with your mitigation strategies. It also allows you to have a great conversation with your board to say, hey, we need investments in supply chain, and we can actually prove to you that what we're investing in is going to protect revenue and reputation for the company. So, that kind of is the center. But then to have that robust information on supplier risk, and also actually have it down to end tiers, where you can say, well, I might know the risk on my supplier, but what about their suppliers and their suppliers? So that concept of multi-tier visibility, and then putting all those risk factors to illuminate the entire supplier network, is really what's going to, drive future improvements and build that resiliency within our supply chains.
Excellent advice and insight. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We have been talking with John Denesian of Moody's. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you, John and Victoria. Now let's take a look at some of the other supply chain news from the week. And Ben, you wrote a story about a new approach to safely ship lithium batteries. Can you share the details?
Yeah, glad to, Dave. In this electronic age that we live in today, the technology around us changes all the time. But one constant has been lithium-ion batteries inside of our devices. Scientists are always looking at ways to make them better, but for some time now, lithium-ion has just been the best way to pack a lot of power into a small space. And that's whether you're talking about electric cars or forklifts, cell phones, laptops. The problem is that they get so dense that density of power can sometimes lead to trouble when the battery cells overheat, even catch fire. We've covered that challenge on container ships. We've covered it around the e-bikes, the electric bikes that many urban last mile delivery companies use to haul packages around in cities. They've caused a couple fires in recent years, sadly. It's also a problem, though, as I said, in longer range supply chains, when those bicycles or those other devices are packed inside shipping containers. And of course, that can be a problem, and they sometimes catch fire, for example, while on board a container ship. But this week, we heard about one way to move toward a safer way to transporting those lithium-ion batteries. And it has to do with another buzzword that we've covered often, which is blockchain.
Well, Ben, what does blockchain have to do with fire prevention?
Great question. This was a deal that we're talking about here between MSC, also called the Mediterranean Shipping Company, the maritime freight firm, and a group called Global Shipping Business Network, GSBN. They're a not-for-profit consortium that enables paperless shipping data exchange between supply chain partners. So MSC said that it would collaborate with GSBN to solve the increasing problem of misdeclarations of cargo, where shippers sometimes send cargo or freight containing batteries, but don't admit it for various reasons, could be customs, you know, could be tariffs. But then the carrier doesn't know where the dangerous cargo may be located in its own ship, or, for example, which container to put out first in the case of a fire. So GSBN uses blockchain, and that ensures a secure and unalterable record of each shipment to create what it calls safe transportation certificates. And those can be shared directly between product safety laboratories that certify that the batteries are properly manufactured or stowed or packed, and whoever's carrying them. So GSBN is actually working to extend that collaboration now to a wider group of certificates as well, and to expand the network of laboratories that study them to increase coverage for carriers. The announcement actually came the same week for GSBN also said that an additional maritime carrier called Hapag-Lloyd would use GSBN's network to issue electronic bills of lading instead of paper ones. So likewise, more secure, more easily shared. And Hapag-Lloyd actually has a target of achieving 100% of those electronic bills of lading, or EBAL, by 2030. So, you know, this blockchain thing seems to be a direction that the maritime sector in particular is moving towards.
And that's really interesting. And I guess we'll have to see how easily it becomes adopted in the marketplace.
Yeah, it has to be profitable. It has to be easy to use, right? But there's definitely, it looks like there's some benefits.
Exactly. Thanks, Ben.
Glad to.
And Victoria, you wrote this week about new demands for forklifts and other industrial trucks. Can you tell us more?
Yes, that's right, Dave. So demand for forklifts, aisle trucks, container handlers, and similar equipment is on the rise, and that's thanks to planned infrastructure development projects around the world. This is according to data from Chicago-based research firm Markets and Markets, and that report was released earlier this month. The researchers say demand for industrial vehicles for material handling and transportation is set to grow at a compound annual growth rate of nearly 5% by 2030, so over the next 5.5 years or so. And that will bring the total market size to $64.3 billion globally. The growth is being driven by initiatives aimed at modernizing transportation networks, building new warehouses, and also enhancing logistics capabilities. So a variety of projects planned over the next few years, and companies will need material handling equipment to go along with those plans.
And of course, industrial trucks covers a wide range of material handling equipment. Did the report say what specific types of equipment will be most in demand?
It did. Aisle trucks, which could include narrow or very narrow aisle equipment, also referred to as VNA models, are expected to see the highest growth rates, according to this report. And this type of equipment is needed in warehouses with narrow aisles, obviously. And that could include facilities where companies are looking to maximize floor space and take advantage of ceiling height. That's been a prominent trend. The report predicts that the Asia Pacific region will hold the largest share of this type of equipment. And that's driven mainly by demand in manufacturing and industrial markets, especially automotive, oil and gas, and energy and utilities. The report also forecasts equipment demand in the healthcare sector, though. The researchers cite growing adoption of semi-autonomous and autonomous forklifts for moving pharmaceuticals, assembly of medical devices, as well as for sorting and control of products. So that's pretty much what the report's all about. And all of this, I think, should bode well for those equipment manufacturers out there.
Yes, it certainly should, and it just continues to show the current strength of the materials handling industry. We saw that, of course, very much at MODEX last month at the MODEX show in Atlanta.
Absolutely, yes.
Thanks, Victoria.
You're welcome.
We encourage listeners to go to dcvelocity.com for more on these and other supply chain stories. Also, check out the podcast notes section for some direct links to read more about the topics that we discussed today. And we'd like to thank John Denesian of Moody's for being our guest. We welcome your comments on this topic and our other stories. You can email us at podcast@agilebme.com. We also encourage you to subscribe to Logistics Matters at your favorite podcast platform. Our new episodes are uploaded on Fridays. And a reminder that Logistics Matters is sponsored by Trevero Logistics. Trevero Logistics is an experienced Midwest-based freight brokerage firm. They have a national network of trusted carriers ready to meet your freight transportation needs. Visit Trevero.com and let their experts find you a solution. That's TRAVERO.com. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Logistics Matters. Be sure to join us. Until then, have a great week.